I went, wow, that was the first moment I can look back and tangibly say I chose curiosity and got a better outcome.
This is Choose to Be Curious, a show all about curiosity. We talk about research and theory, but mostly it's conversations about how curiosity shows up in work and life. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Welcome. Come. Choose to be curious with us. Once upon a time, I recorded this show in a very cool production studio with suspended rubber floors, an elegant wooden sound diffusion wall, and a door that shut out the world so thoroughly that musicians would literally sigh appreciatively when it closed. That was before COVID drove us all homeward, other forces eventually killed the studio, and I came to rely on my spare bedroom for recording. Each week now, before I record, I have a little setup routine, hanging sound-absorbent fabric over two reverberant doors, dropping the shades on a large window, piling two choice stuffed animals around my mic and desk. It's a bit of a production, and it looks ridiculous, but I do think it helps on sound, and I try to think of it as part of my creative process. It wasn't until I read Tyler Chisholm's new book, Curious as Hell, Leading and Growing with Curiosity, that I thought of this setup as anchoring, a technique he recommends that might be part of a curiosity workday. Anchoring is the idea that we can set the stage for our success by preloading ourselves with what we know are good, constructive emotions and mindset, and establishing a physical act as an anchor to trigger getting there. It could be the squeeze of a hand, a pat of a fluffy blue elephant, for example. The goal is to link our mental experience to a physical trigger that helps us recreate the headspace we need when we need it. The quilts and stuffies are an anchor. They are part of what gets me into my choose to be curious mindset, creating a space, as Tyler puts it, where curiosity thrives. I love that framing, and I am grateful to Tyler for it. Tyler Chisholm is the author of Curious as Hell, Leading and Growing with Curiosity, published in May of this year, a book that frames curiosity as a daily leadership practice. I think it's safe to say he doesn't just talk about curiosity, he's living it. I'm just shy of 300 episodes here. He's at like 650 and counting between two podcasts, Collision YYC, and They Just Get It. That's a lot of curiosity conversations. With more than 16 years experience as co-founder and CEO of Calgary-based Clear Motive Marketing, he's come to call curiosity his superpower. It isn't often that I come upon someone whose curiosity journey is both very different from my own, but offers some delightful parallels anyway. And I am delighted to have Tyler Chisholm join me today. So welcome, Tyler.
Lynn, thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I am just smiling from ear to ear and happy to be here.
Oh, well, I'm delighted to have you. And congratulations on Curious as Hell. It is a delightful read, a really interesting, very doable read, and also like a really nice book to hold.
Oh, thank you. I want it to feel comfortable. I want it to feel approachable. I want it to be very, very tangible. Leaders, especially aspiring leaders, we're all busy. We're all chasing. We're all looking for the next thing that's going to help us unlock. I certainly was. There's a little bit of, it's not a biography, but there are also some hints of my journey in there. I wanted to make sure I really kept my audience in mind. And I know so many people that I don't have time to read, but yet you put your hands on something that resonates with you. You make the time.
Yeah, well done. You have this great sort of first curiosity story when you suddenly had this moment of realizing I could lean into curiosity here. And I wanted to invite you to share it because I think we all have some curiosity origin stories and I want to hear yours.
I love it. Thank you so much. I was 18. I was living in Montreal. And I thought it would be cool, and I think the word cool really matters here, to buy a pool cue. Was I a great pool player? No, I was okay. But you know, I thought it would be cool. I had some money literally burning a hole in my pocket. I needed to go to buy a pool cue. So of course you gather up a few of your friends, you jump in the car, you drive down to Dufferin Games and walk in. And I still remember that moment and it was in slow motion in my mind. And of course, this is in hindsight because when I'm 18, I'm still kind of a knucklehead a little bit. I'm okay with that. But I'm looking back because where did this come? Or where did this start? Or where did I choose to go left versus right? The funny thing about this story, I've had so many people reach out to me and go, oh, do you want to hear my story? when I did or didn't lean in or lean out. And so Gilles walks over and he saw, welcome to the store, with his French accent and older guy. He was probably in his 30s, but I was 18. So he was an older guy at the time. And he says, oh, what can I do for you? Can I help you, in French? And we respond. And he starts asking all these questions. Do you want this weight, that weight, this kind of grain, this type of fastener, this weight? And I was like, I still remember slowing down, being like, I have no idea what Jill is talking about. And I can pretend and try to look cool, which was the whole point of the road trip. Or I could say, I don't really know. I just want a pool cue. I went with, I don't know. I just want to buy a pool cue. And Jill gave us a 45 minutes to 1 hour lesson of everything you need to know, which I've most probably promptly forgot about many, many years later. But it was that moment I looked back on it when I chose curiosity versus pretending versus showing up versus swagger versus all the things that I find as a leader, I still had to relearn on my journey. But that TSN turning point for me of going, I don't know, Jill, what do I need to know about buying a pool cue? And where I came away from that versus the alternative approach would have ended me in a very, everyone would have known I didn't know what I was talking about, including Jill. And rather than that, I went with curiosity, and it opened the door for something that was going to unfold later in my life that I really had no idea.
It's a great story. And it's so easy to picture. as you kind of revisit that story over time, do you find new things in it? I mean, you got it at the moment, but I'm wondering sort of what reflection adds to it.
And I don't know if I did as much as I got it in hindsight. Writing a book is a very interesting exercise. When did I pick that up? When did I learn that? When did that become something I've now taken for granted as a leader, that I just do that? There was a time when I didn't just do that. I've thought about it many, many times over the years, and in putting it in the frame of curiosity and choosing curiosity over potentially showing up and allowing bravado or a false sense of I'm in charge, so I should have all the answers. I was the guy buying a pool cue, so I should know what I was doing. I think that really started to, you know, when you read a book later, like twice or three times, and it feels like it's a different book. Every time I relive that story, the story slightly shifts. When I was writing the book, I went, wow, that was the first moment I can look back and tangibly say, I chose curiosity and got a better outcome. And I've been building on that ever since.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there was a touchstone moment for you in your role as a CEO and a leader, where suddenly you sort of felt like, something shifted, where suddenly you thought, there's a tool I need. I mean, how did you find your way to curiosity as a leader? Because it sounds like, based on what you're saying and within the book, that like you weren't always in that space. So how did you get there?
Many, many years of being on a self-discovery journey. I talk in the book about the three tiers of self-curiosity, relational, and strategic curiosity. I could have wrote a book just on self-curiosity as a leader. And over the years, getting elevated into leadership roles, maybe when I wasn't ready, wasn't prepared, but didn't know the difference. Running my own company, where you become in a leadership role because you're the one who started the company, doesn't mean you have all the skills. And I would say when it really hit me was it was an intersection between, and you mentioned earlier in the intro, of starting the podcast. I really liked the version of me that showed up on the podcast because it wasn't about me. It was always about the audience. It was always about making the guest the hero. I only reason that I even felt competent, confident, clear, concise to show up was I allowed myself to go, well, Tyler, why would you think you have all the answers? The guest is the expert. Just be curious. And we did a 360 leadership review at work. And I got some feedback that I never let my team be the hero. I was jumping in with all the answers. I was riding in on my white stallion of leadership. And all of a sudden I went, wait a second, podcast me doesn't do that, but leadership me is still kind of doing that. And the 360 pointed that out very clearly, that I could chose to deny it at my own peril. But I started to realize that I had this gym, this dojo, this yoga mat place to practice curiosity on the podcast. And then the why not leadership? So it was about 6 years ago when I really started to overlap the two, but it was some feedback that I received at work that I was kind of shutting my team down. I was closing the door to their curiosity through my need to have all the answers, which was also fatiguing, ineffective, and not really working out. But yet that was still the narrative I had. Once those two started to blend is when I believe that curiosity started to come off the shelf a lot more often in my day-to-day as a, hey, I wonder what it would be like if I was this way. And the feedback started to come in. So it was an intersection. So I give podcasting a lot of credit for it as well.
This is one of the places where there's some interesting parallels, but not quite the same sort of thing. I came out of the nonprofit world. I was chief operating officer of a national advocacy group. It was basically my job to know everything. And eventually I came to realize, better at that job if you don't know everything and you're curious. And then I'm like, I can't be the only one who's thinking this. There must be research, right? Somebody must be doing something, learning something about this. And so I made myself a student of curiosity. I just wanted to know what we knew about curiosity beyond thinking that it was something that George the monkey was into and that we mostly associated with creativity and kids, right? And then, you know, my life story was a little bit different. I ended up leaving that universe, had a health crisis, did a hard left turn of like, life is short, I'm going to go do something different. Didn't know what that was, led me to the radio. It's such an interesting thing to sit in a regular way with people and be curious about them and to luxuriate in those conversations. Mm. And so when I came in your book to the section on rapport, and you're talking about it in the workplace, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, if I were thinking about my life in the, you know, in the paid workplace, oh, it was so much about building rapport with people. I'm dealing with people all over the country. And with the radio show, you know, ever so much more so, I wanted to lean in with you there because I think we have this common experience, but maybe different takes on it. And I just wanted to get you talking about how is rapport about leading and growing with curiosity?
Oh, I love that you latched onto that. And I think that you're a great example of the radio show environment where you have such a short window of time. Like we just met about 15 minutes ago. And now all of a sudden, if we're going to have a quality conversation that the audience will value, it's got to have meaning. It's got to have connection. We both have to show up. And therefore, as the host, I always took it as my responsibility to create that comfort and to create that sense of like, you're in a safe place. First of all, psychological safety. You're good. Nothing. Hey, don't worry. If something doesn't work out, we'll edit it out. Be yourself. It's okay. Show up. How is that different than interacting with any other human? But it was so much easier to study when I put it in a bottle. And that bottle or that those guardrails, as we joked about earlier, the guardrails of a podcast or a radio show, I've got to start. I've got an end. I've got to make it. I got to. I want to. I need to. It's my responsibility as the host and or the leader in this environment to create the most value for the guest, which then the audience can benefit from.
Yeah.
I think it's almost exactly a little microcosm snapshot of what happens every day as a leader, as a human. I picked work, but let's be honest, curiosity does not stop at the
It knows no boundaries.
As a marketer, I said, I had to pick an audience. I had to pick a persona. I had to pick a lane to go in. But it was hard for me to not make this about just curiosity in the context of real life. I did see a need in the leadership space as I see so many leaders burn out because they're supposed to, quote, sometimes often self-inflicted, have all the answers. And that's just not sustainable. Yeah. But as a podcast host or as a radio host, I never try to have the answers because I'm not the guest. The guest is the expert. So there are some different parallels, but I think one's a great practice dojo for the other.
Yeah. You actually have a nice way of putting it in the book. You say something about rapport signals to others that their thoughts are valued. And that starts with inviting somebody as a guest, finding them. I mean, there's sort of a lot of stuff that happens even long before we sit down with someone, right? There's some nice groundwork. And I thought, what would it be like if every conversation we had with people felt like that kind of groundwork had gone into it? How would that transform the universe?
It would be lovely, Lynn. I'm just going to call a spade a spade.
You're listening to Choose to Be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton, and I'm joined today by Tyler Chisholm.
But think about it as you know, you sent me an email to prep for the session. So I felt prepared. I felt valued. When you invite your team into a meeting, do you give them an agenda? Do you let them know what's expected? Do you let them speak and then, or do you just ask questions so that you can already answer the answer you know you want to have? I think as leaders, we do a lot of things that would also make for a very bad radio show host.
This is so true. This is so true.
5 minutes before, Lynn, you change the schedule and say, can we just meet later today? I would immediately feel devalued. But yet leaders do that all the time.
Yeah. Or people show up and they have no idea really what is expected of them. Yeah.
Nothing says you don't value my time like that.
Yeah. Can we actually go through some of the practices that you itemize here on rapport?
Let's talk about it.
So this one was funny for me. The first one that you include, mirroring and matching, meaning matching yourself to the thinking in the radio show or podcast context, mm-hmm. kind of matching the energy level of the guest. And I thought, oh, I so do that. There are very different energy levels and vibes. Some of them are really kind of eggheady and
yep.
academic, and others are woohoo, kind of party in a can. Talk to me about that.
So much research has, of course, went down the rabbit hole on many of these different. I encountered mirroring and matching many, many years ago, probably 15 years ago, when I took my NLP practitioners. And they talk so much about in a coaching or an interactive environment, how important it is to kind of match that I like to use the word frequency, which I think we could do a whole podcast just on that. But the energy and meeting the other person where they're at, not just where you are. And so for me on a leadership journey, I had to really understand where I was being self-indulgent. I'm the big, the loud, the fast, the quick, the I don't need time to think about it. Let's do it now. I found that was being very indulgent if the person I was interacting with wasn't matching that frequency. And as a leader, I do think there is a responsibility that I have to show up in a way that sets my team up for success, which also means being respectful of where they are. And I think it starts as easy as just how someone sits, how they breathe, the pace. I was listening to some of your episodes this morning. I was like, oh, Lynn has a bit of a slower pace than I normally do. So I'm going to come ready to match that a little bit more. And thinking about that in advance, I think it's almost easier when it's a one-on-one little snapshot, but when it's every day and your life is moving quick and you need to show up for someone, that moment of, you talked about anchoring in the intro. Okay, I just need to slow down until I can observe. And then maybe I can speed up, or maybe I need to stay slow. Oftentimes for me, because my tendency is to be quick and over the top, I have an anchor that the psychological sigh, take a breather and really meet that person where they are, which I think can show up almost immediately through their words, their pace, their tone, how they sit, their body language. Being deliberate and paying attention to it sounds like it's a lot of work, but it's a split second, especially when it's people you work with all the time. But the first one of who am I and how do I like to show up, and that might not always be right for the situation, is that level of self-curiosity that I say is at the foundation of it all.
Yeah. I heard somewhere a great expression that, you know, good leaders are self-aware.
Above all else, Lynn.
Yes. Well, it's funny that you say this about our natural speeds, because I had the same reaction listening to some of yours. I was like, wow, he comes in hot. Like, this is going to be one of those conversations where I'm going to be moving at a faster pace than I often do. So we were both thinking about that. But that's part of the...
Kudos to us, Lynn, for doing our homework.
Exactly. Kudos, I mean, that's us. The takeaway, right? That's very cool. So then there's active listening and expansive questions. Like, you and I could spend a zillion hours on that one. Yes. But is there something in particular that you think of in terms of rapport there?
The more comfortable I am in my own skin, I think, I believe my experience and what I've observed with others, working with the leaders in many different contexts, if I'm running this narrative in my head of like, I got to have all the answers. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. I'm also half not listening. I'm getting distracted by the noise in my own head. So the more comfortable I am and the more I show up, and I'm legitimately curious about like, wow, whatever you said, and I love to paraphrase and I love to build. It's just my natural tendency, which works really well in a podcast. You speak to an egghead, I think you referred to, a highly technical guest who gives you a 10-minute dialogue on something technical. And my ability to go, okay, so what I heard was, and I say it back, and I think that might connect too. Not only do they feel heard, everyone who's listening, and sometimes in a leadership environment, it's not just you and the other person, like, oh, okay. You actually added to, and you questioned to add, or you asked to add, or you asked to build. But if I'm too running this narrative of like, oh, geez, I need to look smart when Lynn asked me a question. And she's like, oh, sorry, what? I didn't even hear what Lynn said. And I just got to rush in and try to look smart, which I suffered from as a leader, back to having all the answers. That does not make that other person feel heard, because you literally didn't hear probably half of what they said. You didn't hear it, but you also didn't feel it. And I think that that's part of it too. When I'm running my own narrative and that volume is turned up too loud, that act of listening, what about if we added, and then you get into that building conversation where the other person is equally part of it. Everybody walks away often with something neither of you would have gotten alone too. I think that's a really cool benefit of that type of interaction.
I mean, I think that also feeds right into another one on your list, which is framing challenges as exploration, right? That it feels like an adventure. It feels like something that you can do together.
I wonder, what would it be like if?
Right. Well, you have a great example of this. I think it was maybe around COVID, where it's like, how can we make it easy to?
..
As this wonderful generative question that does all of these things in terms of thinking about people's needs and their pacing, and that's expansive and collaborative and Some questions really open things. Others drive to a narrow focus. But something like that invites people in a really lovely way.
About COVID, there was so much pressure for leaders to have the answers. Nobody had the answers during that period of time. So rather than locking ourselves in a virtual boardroom and trying to figure out what our team needed, we really came up with our culture for COVID will be make it easy for our team to do whatever they felt was important, find their files, be with their family, have a sense of security, whatever it was. And the sense of relief that just came off of us as a leadership team trying to figure out something that was not able to be figured out at a time when the world was upside down. But as soon as our team started participating, our culture improved during the people like, oh, remote must have been really so hard on your culture. For us, it actually was an improvement because it shifted. We stopped trying to have all the answers, not just as leader, but as the leadership team, and became much more collaborative. And the benefit was exponential for us.
Yeah.
It sounds scary sometimes for a lot of leaders. You mean the team got to decide? Absolutely. There were guardrails, but the more we talked, the guardrails got wider and wider because nobody really did anything that didn't make sense. It all kind of worked at the time.
Yeah, but you know, I also think, I mean, yes, it's scary, but I also found, oh my God, it was such a relief to not hold myself responsible for knowing anything and to be clear with everybody else. Like, I'm not here to save the day, that we're all in this together. It was a relief to not feel that self-imposed, but also to not buy into the structural kind of expectation. Oh, like, I think that's your job. You said,
there's two folds there. Yeah. There is the, you know, make sure when you bring that monkey to my office, you take it with you when you leave. I had a coach teach me that years ago. Because if you keep taking the monkey, you're going to have an office full of monkeys. And as fun as that sounds, we all have notched enough TV. That's chaos.
Such a good list. We haven't even covered them all. But the last one on the list on rapport is the power of story and metaphor.
I've heard this years ago and I don't know if it's true. So I'm going to give myself an asterisk. I was taking NLP and they talked about why metaphor mattered. And they said, basically you give someone facts and figures and details, the conscious mind takes part. The conscious mind goes, no. Where if you tell a story and your metaphor and a narrative, so many reasons that we've been telling stories since the beginning of time. And if you want to go down the Joseph Campbell road of just storytelling and how it plays into religions and our history as a society, it bypasses the conscious mind. It goes right to the subconscious and allows it to absorb and register. Mm-hmm. And good storytelling and rapport, all of a sudden I'm not dictating, I'm not telling anymore. I'm just spinning a story that you can now connect with. And oftentimes in an environment where you have a lot of trust and you've got psychological safety, I've often found that other person will then add pieces of what their shared experience into the story. Where can you get to a better place, whether it's a friend coffee or in a business environment? We're like, oh, well, yeah, there was this time that I remember this happening. And oh, yeah, oh, I totally get that. Or sometimes they'll even roll their eyes like, oh, Tyler telling another story. It creates a safety and it creates a lightness in the room where if you do it well, the embedded message, people are able to skip through all the analysis paralysis and go, ah, okay, I get it. All right, let's move forward. It's a little bit playful, but I also think it touches much closer to who we are as humans in the fact that we've been telling stories since the beginning of time.
Yeah. Okay, so that's my segue to the big jar of wannabe analogies. Now you've just provided listeners with exactly why I do this, because, you know, we get to things we wouldn't get to otherwise.
It's teamwork. So it's teamwork, Lynn. It's teamwork right here. We're living it. We're breathing it.
Okay, so actual jar. I have slips of paper in here. There are random words written on this. I've got one for you, one for me, one for our listeners. And we're going to make an analogy to curiosity with whatever is on these slips of
Lynn,
paper.
Lynn, I feel the pressure mounting, Lynn. You're doing a really good job of winding me up.
Okay, you can feel it. Okay. So yours is penguin. How is curiosity like a penguin? Mine is snow, and I have one for our listeners. So would you like to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I think it would be rude for me not to let you go first. Please, no. Lynn, show me the way. Show me the way.
All right. How is curiosity like snow? Well, a couple of things come to mind. I mean, there's the old trope that, you know, no two snowflakes are alike. I think no two curiosities are alike. I think we have sort of curiosity fingerprints as individuals. But snow is also something that piles up and can completely cover something that can make something kind of unrecognizable to us. And yet then there's also this opportunity to dig through it for the discovery. And so I like both the microscopic, the mini version, and the macro cumulative version of it. of snow as being like curiosity.
Oh, that was very lovely. Thank you for going first. You, one, gave me time to think about it. You also provided a fabulous example. I think curiosity are like penguins, because if I understand this correctly, penguins mate for life. Mm. What is the benefit of mating for life? You get to learn, you get to understand, you get to build trust, you get to build depth of quality of relationship with another being, another entity, another thing. Mating for life with curiosity is exactly what it is. It's a practice. It's something that you can be better at tomorrow. You can slip the day after. But guess what? On Monday, we're still married. I'm still married to curiosity. We're going to figure it out. We're going to move forward. I'm going to practice. I'm going to learn more about myself. I'm going to bring that back to the relationship. And curiosity is only going to open more doors for me. Just like penguins who mate for life and can trust in the fact that that partner will be there for them to raise children and battle the elements, the wind, bunch up together as they face the north wind with Morgan Freeman's voice in the background. I think we've all watched that movie somewhere along the way. I see the relationship, my relationship, and the potential for your audience and everyone out there's relationship with curiosity to be the same. It's a mate for life situation that will ebb and flow, but will always pay off in the long run because you stuck it out.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. And listeners, yours is letter opener. How is curiosity like a letter opener? Let me know. Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, hashtag analogy. Oh my gosh, Tyler, so fun. Thank you,
Lynn.
So much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for coming to me on your show. I love it.
You've been listening to Choose to be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Thank you for joining us here today. You can find all my shows on my website at choosetobecurious.com. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky, all at Choose to be Curious, where you can share your letter opener analogy, hashtag analogy. Many thanks to my delightful guest, Tyler Chisholm. Links to Curious as Hell, Collisions YYC, and They Just Get It, and all his other efforts on my website. Thanks too to Sean Ballack for our theme music, and this is The Summit by K2 via Blue Dot Sessions. I hope you'll join us again next time. And until then, choose to be curious. So I have to ask you though, about your curiosity journal. This is the greatest thing ever. This is such a good curiosity practice. Tell me more.
During COVID, I kept a list by my desk and I literally had two columns in my journal, and I would keep track of wherever I did things in a meeting that took away from the outcome I was hoping to achieve. I got really curious about my own, how I showed up, and eventually devolved to fixed on one side, growth on the other. And I would start keeping notes, and what really came out for me loud and clear, and I still do this today when I need a little tune-up, I'll go, huh, I'm going to keep track and go, you know what? I think I actually shut a few doors there. I think I rushed in with the answers. I don't think I was as open to what the other person had to say. I think I had a few insecurities about a story in my mind about that I was supposed to show up and solve the problem for everybody, versus on the growth side, when I'm curious, when I'm open, when I'm inclusive, when I take the time to build the rapport, all of a sudden I see the outcomes reveal themselves. And it was just a sheet of paper fixed on one side, growth on the other. It was a game changer for me in real time. I just did it under the filter of when curiosity was or wasn't showing up.